Our next presentation will be given by Michael White. He will be presenting a presentation entitled Predicting Edge-of-Field Phosphorus Loss Using Models, Recent Results, and Developments.
Mike. Thank you, Nathan. Before I get started, I just want to acknowledge my colleague and co-author, Darren Harmel, in the back there. We're both with USDA, ARS, and Temple, Texas. There's three things I really want to kind of get across in this presentation. The first one is I want to talk a little bit about the SWOT model, a little bit of the background about models in general, and some of the updates that we've done based mostly on a lot of Peter Battis's work to the phosphorus routines themselves. And then next, I want to get into model testing because I'm a big believer that any kind of model should be tested and some of the routines validated. And then I want to talk a little bit about what's next and some of the things that are still weak in the models that we do need to work on. But first off, what is a model? A model is just a simplified mathematical representation of a complex reality. Some models are more complicated than others. They're a system of equations that's held together with a glue of assumptions, sometimes more assumptions, sometimes less, and the number of those kind of dictates what the quality of that model really is. SWOT is a process-based model. That just means that for all the processes that we think are important in the system, we try to represent those in the model. It runs on a daily time step. So this is the nitrogen cycle, and each one of these white lines would be representative of a process. And with a daily time step model, we would evaluate each one of these processes once a day. So today, and then tomorrow, and the next day, and so, you know, for as long as we choose to run the model. There are a lot of different processes in SWOT. There's a full hydrologic balance, rainfall runoff. Nitrogen-phosphorus cycles are represented on the soil surface and in the soil itself. There's plant growth, carbon dynamics, pond and reservoirs, and some in-stream nutrients that I'm going to talk about a little bit also. So why do we want a model? Well, models provide an understanding of a system and its response to change that's difficult to obtain in any other way. They let us extrapolate this very precious monitoring data that we spend a lot of money collecting to a different location or to a different time. And they let us generate predictions in the complete absence of data. We do have to be careful about doing that, but sometimes we have to have a question answered, and if there's no data, a model certainly is better than just a guess. And they also let us predict things that are unmeasurable, either because we don't have the resources or it's not practically possible, or something that maybe hasn't happened yet. If we want to know, how changing land use from a forest to an urban is going to affect stream flow or some kind of dynamic that we have no way to test. But I want to talk mostly about the SWOT soil phosphorus model, and Peter had some of this shown before. This is the three primary pools, the Laybal active and stable pools. And you can kind of think of the Laybal pool as a plant available and the stable pool as not. It tends to be larger and less available. So when we add a phosphorus fertilizer to the soil, that's going to go into the Laybal pool, which makes the Laybal pool get really big. And it's in an equilibrium with these other pools, so it tries to shift this phosphorus down the chain to the active pool and finally to the stable pool so that a new equilibrium is achieved. And the same thing happens only in reverse when we grow a crop, and the crop extracts its nutrients from the Laybal pool, making it smaller so that it needs to extract the phosphorus from the other pools. And both of these processes occur all the time simultaneously, so it really is a dynamic. One thing to note is the size ratios of these pools previously has been fixed in SWOT, so that the active pool is always 1.5 times the Laybal pool, and the stable pool is 6 times the Laybal pool. And this is maybe not a bad assumption under normal conditions, but if you went out and we added a lot of poultry litter or we added a truckload of phosphorus fertilizer, that all goes into the Laybal pool. And eventually in the models it would be redistributed using these exact ratios. And if we had all that phosphorus in the soil, it might tend to stay more in these Laybal forms because there's There's just not enough capacity to hold on to it in these other larger pools. And also there's transformation rates that mediate the rate at which phosphorus moves between these pools. And I'm not going to get into the units of these, but this one is on the order of days, and this one is months and years. So one of the first things that we did, based on Peter's work, was to take the active labile ratios and change those from fixed to dynamic. And that's based on clay content, organic carbon, and labile phosphorus. Very, very similar, probably identical to the apple model that you showed earlier. And we also added a dynamic ratio between the active and stable pool, and that's based on just total soil phosphorus. So if we have a lot of phosphorus in the soil, it tends to be in these more available forms. We've also updated the rates, again, based mostly on Peter's work. Between the labile and active pool, that's now a dynamic rate based on fertilization and days since the thing was kind of out of balance. The active stable transformation, we added that one. That one's based on calcium carbonate content in the soil. We primarily did that because in the blackland prairie area, they have really calcareous soils, and we needed to do that to get it to fit some of our local data. And we've also changed all these coefficients so that they are all driven by soil water content also, so we don't have transformations if the soil is dry. And in Texas this year, we had really, really dry soils. So if we had gone out and put phosphate fertilizer, it would stay in the labile pool until the water is there to allow it to move around and transform. And also I want to talk very briefly about the soil layer representation. In SWOT and APEX also, and EPIC, the soil layers are all simulated separately. Of critical importance would be the surface layer. That's the top 10 millimeters of soil. It's the source of all the phosphorus losses that we see in runoff, and any surface phosphorus or surface applied fertilizers always go into this pool. And the model has always allowed leaching from that surface layer to the layer immediately below it. But in the latest version now, we allow leaching from layer 1 to layer 2, layer 3, so on and so forth down the profile, using just a simple coefficient. We've also updated the in-stream phosphorus model for SWOT. The original one's based on Qual2E, and we had some problems with it in certain watersheds. It doesn't really have a mass balance, and it doesn't really consider attached algae very well. So we proposed an alternative in-stream model that's based on the equilibrium phosphorus concentration concept. And this is just a concept that there's an equilibrium between water in a stream and the sediment underneath it. And this is something that you can measure in the field by taking a sediment sample, keeping that in a jar with some water above it, and seeing what the equilibrium phosphorus concentration winds up being in that water. And we added a deposition and scour model to this and a soluble P uptake within the water column. Next, I want to move on to verification, validation, model testing, because I think these are really, really important. Anytime we make changes to the model, I think we really need to go through an exercise to make sure that the model performs the way that we think it should and see whether the changes we made were beneficial or not. One of the first things we did was test it with a manure application. This is SWOT predicted average soluble P concentration. We added a manure application in April here, and we see a large jump in the soluble P runoff concentration that kind of decays and reaches some new equilibrium kind of towards the end of the year. So it's responding well to manure. And again, I want to reiterate this, and Darren talked about this yesterday, and it's come up quite frequently today, that even our measurement data contains a lot of error, and we need to have reasonable expectations about how good these models need to be before we use them. Total P, the load can be, or we have 27% uncertainty in load from small watersheds, according to Darren's data, and that's a lot. That means that we're probably not going to achieve models that get 0.9 R squared. And again, runoff and sediment are more than half the battle in many cases. We looked at measured data just for an example. This is 25 grassland, 21 cultivated sites, and three variables explained 80% of the total P variability in the monitoring data that we saw. And that was soluble P concentration, runoff volume, and sediment load. And the most important one was sediment load by a significant margin. Next was runoff. And finally, soluble P concentration. So if we can't get the runoff and the sediment right, we don't have any hope of getting the rest of it right. And to do some of the testing, we developed this tool, and it needed to be validated using measured field data, so that's why I'm going to talk about it here. But this is a simplified SWOT interface that we developed called TBET, the Texas BMP Evaluation Tool. It was developed for conservation planners. It includes all the P model updates that we've talked about so far. It's being used right now to evaluate EPA 319, or Clean Water Act 319, and state-funded conservation practices in Texas. This has been going on for about a year now, so a SWOT model is being used by field office personnel. Every time they put out a practice, they evaluate it and determine how many tons of sediment that practice saves, how much phosphorus does it keep out of the water, that sort of thing. And does about 30 conservation practices, and there's no GIS. We did training for this in a day and turned the conservation planners loose with it. And this is some of the model predictions from that tool against measured data. All the black dots here are monitoring sites, and we really focused on Texas and Oklahoma because this is the area that we intended this tool to be used. It was developed for Texas. And we saw a pretty good correlation between the model predictions and the measured data. R-squared of 0.76, and that, reasonably, that's about as well as we're going to do. And remember, this tool is having to predict sediment loss and runoff volume also. So those aren't being used. They're not inputs. So we have that extra variability burden that we have to consider is there. And we also tested the in-stream model. We tested that on the Illinois River Basin in western Arkansas and eastern Oklahoma. It did a pretty good job of replicating in-stream measured soluble phosphorus concentrations. And it taught us a little bit about what was important to the river to the Illinois River as far as the contribution of point sources and poultry litter application. This basin has a lot of poultry litter application, and it's often blamed as the source of a lot of water quality problems. But it also has a number of large point sources that were... I guess they've dropped their effluent concentrations now, but prior to 2006, they had very large discharges. And what we see as far as the equilibrium phosphorus concentration is it's almost completely driven by the point source dischargers. The poultry litter production, which is dominantly in this area here, just didn't seem to have much of an influence on what the stream was seeing on a day-to-day basis, according to the model. So what's next? What do we have left to do? Well, I think we really need to focus that we need reasonable expectations from model. And models are very, very incredibly useful tools, but they are easily abused. And again, a model is a mixture of equations and assumptions and professional judgment. And we can assume anything, so we can model anything. But is it accurate? So we need to test, always test. And the value of a model depends on its prediction uncertainty. So validation is just super critical. And the model is just a tool. Again, garbage in, garbage out. And the prediction quality is almost always operator dependent because the operator is the one that makes all the assumptions that go into the model inputs. And we can control that somewhat in some of the simpler model tools because instead of somebody who's not familiar with the model making those assumptions, we can have an expert modeler make those assumptions ahead of time and simply hide that detail away from the end user. And they need additional improvement. The SWOT model changes on a weekly basis with new science. And collaboration with experts like yourselves is critical. We need that. Some of our future needs, we need to do some kind of surface storage for nutrients applied to frozen soils and a separate manure layer at the soil surface. I know Peter has a model for that, and we've been talking about how to simplify that a little bit so that we can fit it more into the SWOT framework. And I think we need to define the active stable transformations a little bit more because that stable pool is the largest soil phosphorus pool. And when you have a long-term phosphorus application, that's where most of it goes. So we need to better define that so that we know how soil test P changes over time. And in general needs, we need to enhance our sediment predictions. Again, this is more than half the battle when it comes to predicting phosphorus loss. And we need a better representation of the landscape connectivity in SWAT, and that's something that's being worked on right now. And again, I really think we need simpler model interfaces, and we're working on that. And we're going to be in the iPad generation now, and we can't expect everybody to be an expert modeler, but we want them to have access to these tools. So if we can build these simple model interfaces, you know, maybe we don't use them for P evaluation, but there's lots of uses for them. So I think that's a worthwhile thing to do. And with that, I'll close.
Okay, we have time for several questions.
I think one of the main things that we need to do on the transport side, especially for sediment, is to look into inclusion of the Russell 2 algorithms into SWAT. Those are in APEX now. I haven't seen that many validation studies with Wessel 2, but it does seem to be the best technology, at least for edge of field sediment loss. Your other question was about the transport to the stream of the sediment or the phosphorus?
No, I just a little bit more detail. So focusing on Russell 2 then, you have a job here of developing SWAT further, which is being applied in all kinds of contexts. So you're putting it in the Blacklands of Texas. It's also being applied to China, to the Northeast. So there's some very different landscape processes that are occurring. And so you feel that Russell
I doubt it. One thing that we do a lot of is SWAT is used all over the world, and when somebody finds that the model doesn't suit their particular application, it's an open source model. So what's generally done is they'll decide how to change the model to make it fit their situation a little bit better. And they usually collaborate with us on that. They may make the actual changes, or they may give us the equations. But then we work that into the model and make sure it doesn't interfere with the functionality of the model in other places. But the problem is it's used in so many places and so many environments that we don't have the capacity to scour the literature and make something that's going to work everywhere. So we really have to rely on scientific collaboration to kind of get that done. They're in the development code now, so if you're interested in a copy, you can call Nancy, and she can give you an executable that has these things in there. And they'll all appear in the next time that we do a release. So a few months, maybe.
Thanks. Let's go ahead. And, well, time for one more question.
Does the team have the PIS layers working in the background then?
No, what we did, the conservation planners tend to work off of a conservation nutrient management plan. It already has the soil types on it and the slopes on it.